You're listening to the Strongpreneur Podcast, where we're waging war on mediocrity. Live your strong life and build your strong business with me, Tom Reber. Mediocrity dies today.
Hey, thanks for hanging out with me today on the Strongpreneur Podcast. My name is Tom Reber, and I'm founder of Motorheart.com, where we're waging war on mediocrity. And today, I want to welcome Mr. Dan R. Morris to the Strongpreneur Podcast. How you doing, Dan?
Dude, I love mediocrity.
Oh, uh-oh.
I'll tell you why, though.
Why? Let's hear it.
Sometimes I feel like if I can just get it done and get it out, I am way ahead of perfection.
I agree. You know, it is funny. It's, you know, in fact, before we hit record here today, I was just telling you how I just needed to start this thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's funny because I recently wrote a blog post after I recorded my sixth podcast guest. I was like, you know, what have I learned? And one of the big things is, you know, you can't get better if you don't start. So we're
recording a podcast later today, and one of our topics is there's a podcaster in DC. Let me find his name real quick. Ben Wilker. And he runs this, what they're saying is a mega successful podcast. But they're also saying that he is in his fourth iteration. And that just like all creatives, you know, success, failure, reinvention, success, failure, you know, that whole process, he's now going to Kickstarter and he's raised $50,000 to date to, you know, to relaunch with, you know, his new podcast. And he's going to use the money to get bigger guests and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the idea that he has gone through four iterations of the podcast to get where he is today was pretty cool. Because I feel like with our business, since we began, it continues to change. And only certain parts of it have gotten to the point where I would say we're well beyond mediocrity. Mm. A lot of it is, you know, this is good. It's good enough. Let's get it going. And I'm still making changes.
So it's good enough, but we're not going to settle.
Yeah.
You know.
Definitely. You know, we put on, you know, your guests probably don't know or your audience, but we run Blogging Concentrated, my partner, Rachel Martin, and myself. And we travel all over the world teaching bloggers and people who run online businesses how to turn it into a full-time gig. And one of the things that we put out is a workbook that we put out at each event. And every single event so far, and we've done 47, the workbook has changed. Mm-hmm. Because we learned something in the last one. You're like, man, let's not do that subject that way, or let's tweak that subject. And it's expensive because I'd really like to order like 1,000 books and make it, you know, $1 a piece. But each time we're making a change and having to re-go through the whole process. But to some degree, I'm okay with that. It's not a perfect thing yet.
Well, had you waited to make it perfect, you probably wouldn't have had one under your belt yet, right?
And the other problem with making it perfect is that you're the only one who thinks it's perfect. Hmm. Everyone else finds something in it that they wish was better, different, altered some other way. So perfect ends up being like your ideal, but not everyone's.
Sure.
So like our first book for the, I mean, which basically was our curriculum, you know, it included stuff that we thought was fantastic, but we've learned over time that other people, the attendees, they don't necessarily need that. And what I mean, my favorite thing I ended up getting rid of because people wanted other stuff.
Was it, so, they wanted other stuff or they weren't ready for it yet at that point, or?
They wanted other stuff. So when we first started out, our conference is quite a bit different than most others. I mean, it's one day, it's 20 hours of instruction and 8 hours of engagement. And we don't really bring in guest speakers. We just hammer topics all day. So when we first started, I had 28 topics, and I put them on pieces of paper on a table. And when you registered, you got 3 green stickers. And you put the stickers on the topics that you wanted the most. And then we started with the one that had the most stickers.
Wow.
The beginning of the day, and we worked our way down to the one that had the least, if we got that far. So, and I thought that was a great system. But
do you still do that?
No.
No?
We scrapped it.
Okay.
So what I learned was that is that there is peer pressure with that process. I didn't even think this was possible. But if somebody put a sticker on something, then other people were more likely to put a sticker on it. And if nobody put a sticker on it, you were not about to be the only person to want to learn that subject. So what we did is we went to an online thing called Rank-A-List, which doesn't even exist now, but it was awesome. You could email your folks a list and they could reorder it, you know, the order they want it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would see the results of everyone and what order they put it in. So then there was no peer pressure. Now all of a sudden, everyone was doing it on their own, picking the ones that they wanted all by themselves. And I got this great list of like, wow, everyone in this room wants this one topic. So that was even better. You know, it wasn't perfect, but it was better. So then we did that twice. But what I realized with that was that if, and I did not realize with the other, is that when they do this and they pick the topics, I'm no longer in control as the leader in terms of the flow and how I move from one topic to the next, because at each event, I don't really know what we're talking about.
Mm.
So, and the worst thing is everyone would pick SEO. That would be the first thing. So here you are on a Saturday morning, all excited, and I bring up meta descriptions and meta tags, and we're getting into this meaty, you know, nitty gritty stuff, and it really just sort of brought down the energy of the day. So then after all of that, I got a really good feel of what the audience wanted, you know, from all the different things. And that was probably 11. Our first 11 or 12. So after that, I said, all right, I get it. I know what it is that people want, and I understand what the flow should be. So we decided to take over. We created the curriculum and the order and the flow, and now, you know, they're better than ever.
And are the desire of the attendees to have certain topics, do you see that they're pretty consistent?
Yes.
So you've created this curriculum that's meeting those most consistent needs time and time again.
Yeah. Okay. And once we took over the topics and we decided and we dictated what the topics were going to be, then we started actually putting them on the registration page. So now you know what the day covers.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, it didn't stop changing, because as we spoke to people about the different topics, their engagement level, the questions they would ask, the notes they would take, kind of told us, all right, whether or not we were even in the ballpark of people still want this topic. So even today, we're about to embark on another 27 cities starting March 7th. And we're going to go back and redo the books, because we know there's some topics that are new that we never even discussed before, that we didn't really even, you know, they weren't real, like using Scout, the mobile app, using Reddit, using the tools of clout, not clout as for your clout score. Those weren't necessarily topics that were even on the radar last year. So now we're changing again.
So let me back up just a hair. Blogging concentrated. Who's it really for? Like, who's the ideal person that would come to one of your all day events?
So the number one ideal person is a independent blogger who is making money, who gets it, but knows that there is something that they could do to make it even better.
So when you say an independent blogger, like truly a blogger by trade, or somebody that's a coach who has a blog, or explain that a little more.
So I would say if you work for Procter & Gamble and you're running their blog on their site, then you're an employee who blogs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about if you are the CEO of your business,
yeah,
and a blog is a good percentage or a good part of your business, well, basically content marketing, then, and you're making money, then you're ideal. If you're not making money, then the questions that I feel the rookies make or ask take away from everyone else. So ideally, we're looking to fill the room with people who get it. They've been doing good. They got something going, but maybe some of it's by accident. So they don't exactly know how to use the analytics in AdSense to actually make more money that day. Or they don't know every button in Google Analytics to figure out how they can change the funnel.
Yeah.
You know, those are the things that we focus on.
All right. So let's talk about that person who's not the total beginner. So I would actually group myself into that. You know, my main source of income is through my business coaching.
Yeah, exactly. And you'd be great for that.
And what's funny is I started blogging many years ago when I owned a painting company, and we made a lot of money just by creating good, helpful content. And, you know, if you ever listen to Marcus Sheridan and stuff like that, I had him on a while ago, and kind of that whole same approach with building that company. But then when I moved into coaching and what I'm doing now, I really took the same approach, and I just said, okay, what do people need? What are they struggling with in their business? And what I found is that, it's funny because I don't really have an official funnel. But what I do is I create, you know, short videos, and I create blogs on a consistent basis, and people end up subscribing to my list, or they read my stuff on social media. And it's usually 3, 6, 12 months goes by of them reading my stuff, and then they reach out. And they say, hey, I think I'm ready now. So somebody, you know, it sounds like I probably fit that profile. So what are some of the real, like, must-haves that somebody like me has to have on straight to be successful building a strong blog?
So you are, I would say, in the 1%. Meaning the fact that you grasp the human behavior associated with hiring you is way beyond most people. You know, most people don't understand, even realtors. Mm-hmm. They know that when you contact them, you know, some people, like some realtors will follow up and hound. Like, are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready?
Yeah.
But that's not the human behavior of moving. You know, like, you know, you first have that discussion at the dinner table. Maybe we should move. That's when, like, my wife would go to homes.com or something and just start looking. Mm-hmm. And maybe ask a realtor a question, but this is not when the trigger is going to be pulled. So the idea that you have an idea of how long that takes for the trigger to be pulled is, you know, is fantastic. Most people have no grasp of that. The must-haves mm-hmm. for the business, the very first thing is the messaging. The messaging is, I would say, is the most critical part of the entire pyramid. I mean, if you're going to build, you know, a pyramid, that foundation has got to be built on people who've opted in to your messaging. So the example that we give most often is Howard Stern. When you turn on the radio and Howard Stern comes on, it does not take you very long to realize that you are in or you are out.
Boy, like, he's polarizing, isn't he?
Yeah, like he, you're in or out. There's not really a middle ground. So, you know, maybe 8 people out of 100 are in because of what he is. But 23 years later, you know, that's 50 million people who've opted in because what they heard that very first time was their thing. So we say very, very simply, just look at your Twitter description. If your Twitter description says, I'm a mom of 3 and I like pink and my husband's in the military and I own a blog. Mm-hmm. Like, at what point in time does any human being on the planet get to decide I'm in or I'm out? You know, it's just not there. So what we like to see is every entrepreneur starts with their belief statement. You know, like we do. We believe bloggers should produce, you know, blogs should be able to produce a full-time income, provide for vacations, and include retirement. You know, that's what we teach for bloggers. So we say that everywhere. We think that bloggers should be able to make a full-time income, take vacations, and retire. And that's different than what most people say. Most people say, hey, we help bloggers make more money, but that's not really our ultimate goal. Mm-hmm. Our ultimate goal is different. So, you know, the fashion blogger or a value blogger might say, you know, we post deals and coupons all the time. But what I really want you to say is, we scour the earth for the best deals on fashion for you. Because when somebody reads that, I want to know instantly, yep, that is exactly what I need. Or no, that's not what I need. Because I don't want 1,000 Twitter followers who just followed. I want 400 Twitter followers who followed because they love that concept.
And now, it's really sticking your flag in the ground, taking a stand on something.
It is.
Yeah.
You remember in 1969, when Martin Luther King Jr. spoke, you know, in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. 1 million people showed up without Eventbrite.
Right.
Without email reminders.
No Facebook, no tweets, nothing.
And there's a lot of people on the planet who are talking about civil rights stuff. But only one guy was leading with, I believe. And when you believe, when people believe what you believe, they will follow you to the grave. That's why people sleep outside of Best Buy before Apple releases a product. Because Apple never says we have a new product. They say, we believe technology should be easy, fun to use, you know, things like that. And everything after that follows. Because you and I both know if Dell came out with a watch, like there's no way anybody would buy a watch from Dell.
Yeah, big deal.
But Dell's a computer company just like Apple. But Apple leads with the belief statement. We believe technology should be easy to use and fun to look at, basically. So they can become an MP3 company, a watch company, a computer company, and their followers will lead because they believe that same thing. If you're going to be an influential entrepreneur, you've got to have the people in your court who believe what you believe, because those are the people who are going to buy your book, attend your webinars, buy your products, because they are trying to bolster their own belief system.
So how does that mom you just described who has a husband in the military, you know, I've heard from some people like they feel like there's nothing a whole lot that's real interesting about them to create such a polarizing statement. And then another part to this question is, I think a lot of time when people hear polarizing, and maybe that's the wrong word and it's just the one I'm using, it has more of a negative connotation. So what do you tell somebody who just feels like they don't, you know, how do they get there? You know, I don't know what's really different about me or.
So what most people struggle with is the idea that other people are like them. Mm-hmm. We had a blogger who had a recipe blog, and you know, there's a ton of recipe blogs. So, and the navigation on a recipe blog is like, you know, food, dinner, you know, dinner, breakfast, lunch, sauces, desserts. You know, that's like the basic, like here's some dessert recipes. And then, so I asked them straight out, like, okay, look, you can't just have a dessert, a generic recipe blog. Like nobody gives a crap about that. You need an angle. And everyone has an angle. They just don't know that it exists. So, if for me, the easiest way to get someone to the angle of why they exist is to start teaching them how to cancel things out. So, for instance, I will say, how many Saudi Arabian dessert recipes do you put on your blog? And then they will say, well, I don't do any Saudi Arabian dessert recipes. And I'm like, oh, so your blog is not about international recipes. It's something different, correct? And then they can start to see, oh, it is a little bit different. I don't have everything. I have this. So one blogger said, you know what I'm afraid to say is I'm afraid to tell people that I used cake, you know, box cake recipes. Like I'm okay if you go to the store and you buy a box mix and you come home and you make the cake, because this is not what food bloggers do. But the fact of the matter is there are millions of people who buy box cake mixes. And they're more than happy to read a recipe that shows them how to jazz up the box recipe. If you can just be proud of who you are, then there are people out there who are going to follow that. Like, hey, I love jazzing up box cake mixes. You know, there are people who'd get on board with that.
Totally, yeah. What I love about that approach, which, you know, when you asked about the Saudi Arabian desserts, was, you know, so many times when we start, you know, stripping things away, I mean, things can't help but get clearer.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's not always about more. It's you know, give the thing some space and see what comes about.
Yeah, like you'll hear people say all the time, my target audience is moms, you know, between 30 and 45 years old. Mm-hmm. And I would say, oh, do you translate that into 270 languages then? And they will say, no, I mean, like, American moms. Oh, American moms. So then my first question is, can you think of a single American mom between 30 and 45 years of old who could care less about your site? And they all know someone, you know? They're like, yeah, I got lots of friends who don't read my site. Like, okay, well, tell me what's different about those people than the people who do read your site. Because now we're starting to get to the meat of who you actually serve.
Yeah, you know, it's what this is saying to me is really creating that messaging and that positioning and it's hard work.
It is.
You know, and am I correct in saying that the majority of bloggers don't put the work in?
No, I think that would be disingenuous.
Okay.
I would say that a lot of them don't know what work needs to be put in. There's no school for this. And then a lot of them find success without doing that because that's naturally how they speak anyway. So getrichslowly.org, he sold that site for like $2.1 million a few years ago to money.com or something like that.
Right.
And he hadn't done any SEO. He didn't do any keyword research. He didn't do anything like that, but he ranked really well. And he had a really big following. But the reason that he did, you know, he didn't do any of the stuff that you and I would suggest people do. But the reason that he did was that the way he wrote was he never really went off on a tangent. If he was going to write about, you know, getting a better mortgage rate, that he just colloquial wrote straight that one topic without failing to cover everything in that topic. That was just his natural thing. Mm-hmm. So since he had a more Wikipedia content style where he strictly focused on one topic, he naturally used the keywords that he needed to use, and he sort of put them in the order, and he was, instead of being cutesy with blog post titles, they were like how to reduce your mortgage rates. You know, they were very simple. So without putting in any of the basic work and this kind of stuff, where we're figuring out our target market and we're doing our natural business things, his, just the way he operated, created that success path. And it wasn't really explained other than the fact that what he was doing worked. So some people, what they're doing works, but in the case of him and in most other entrepreneurs who find that everything seems to be working, is they aren't ever looking at how do I get out? Like, how do I retire? How does this end? Mm-hmm. They don't see that. And so while it's working, they end up building something that can't end. Or they build something that keeps them so busy all the time that there's really no way to get out. You know, there are coupon bloggers who post 20 to 45 times a day. You know, every single deal that comes out, no matter where it is, you know, Amazon or their local store or Kroger or whatever. So they built this kind of a prison in which they're making really good money. But if you counted it by the hour, you know, it'd be pennies.
Yeah. So what advice do you have for people who are finding like, oh my God, I could be creating content 24 hours a day and always going, how do you personally recharge and strengthen yourself and step away? I mean, what kind of routines do you have in place? What's a day look like for you like that?
Well, first of all, I think everyone, you know, in our Sequoia curriculum, our first topic is risk. And most people don't really think about risk much. And in fact, when you were saying that, you know, you like to produce, you know, you like to put out the content that your audience needs, you know, and help them with their issues. I feel like that we do that too, but there are some things as leaders where we know the topics they need to learn, even if they don't know how to ask. So risk is one of those. And in this question, if you're building a business that doesn't, I mean, that keeps you just constantly cranking out content, then your risk really is burnout. Mm-hmm. And if you're not assessing that risk, like if you're not even considering that as a real possibility, then you're kind of missing out on, you know, on the whole philosophy of business. Because, you know, Walgreens, which you're familiar with, they have one major giant risk item that you wouldn't really even consider. And that risk item is that at every single intersection in the United States, there is a good chance that the Department of Transportation will put a median in the road or some way so that people cannot turn into the store. Hmm. So they make their developers go, you know, go to the ends of the earth to talk to every single person in the transportation department to figure out what is the future of this road. Is there a chance it's going to be widened? Is there a chance there's going to be a median? You know, that is our big risk. So with us, you know, with online entrepreneurs, with coaches, our risk is really burnout. And part of that is that we work harder than the income that comes in, and our family, which we call shareholders, can no longer handle the sacrifice. You know, and that stress kind of breaks things. So if we don't factor in that burnout in our risk assessment of how we build our business, then we can't include vacations and retirement and stepping away for the day, you know, those kinds of things. You know, my parents, they run porchideas.com, and they write like 5 pages a month of content, and they make more than $100,000 a year on the ads from the site alone. So they have this idyllic world where they can travel, they can come over and watch my kids, they can hang out all the time, they can go visit my brother, and they really only have to put out a few pages a month. And, you know, for the last 3 years, that's really been working well for them. But they have an SEO risk, you know. All the traffic comes from the search engines.
Right.
And if something changes, that whole cookie crumbles. So for us, you know, the burnout thing, if we just start getting tired or realizing, man, I just need a break, then the cookie can start to crumble. You know, for Rachel and I, we travel all over the world. You know, we're in May, we're going to go to New Zealand for 10 days, and we're going to put on 4 conferences. But we have purposely built into that trip 3 extra days where we can do nothing. Mm-hmm. She's going to schedule her Facebook posts. I'm going to schedule some blog stuff. I'm going to be prepared to not be absent from social media while I'm actually absent. But we're definitely building in the time so that we don't regret the joys in life later that we could take advantage of today. And I think without really thinking through that process, that whole concept of burnout can really crush your business.
Yeah, so years ago, 10 years ago now, when I hired my first business coach for my old business, I remember him always saying, you know, hey, let's look at your business and describe it to me when it's winning. You know, when things are, when it's built the way you want it to be built, what does it look like? And get really clear on that and begin building it that way now, or you will get into that rat race where you're burning out and it's, you know, no fun.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I would echo that. I mean, it makes total sense. And I think, this is also why I think your events are perfect for the people who've been in the game a little while, because they've been in long enough to realize that, you know, I might have to get a little more clear on what I want this thing to look like versus a brand new blogger who's just figuring some things out.
Oh, and those, so. I mean, I'm 100% for brand new, but man, the level of questions and engagement is totally different.
Right.
And I mean, just totally different. It really zaps me.
So let me ask you this. You touched on a couple times now. You've talked about SEO and keywords, and then you talked about, was it Man versus Debt? You said who didn't really do any of that. He was just kind of authentically himself, and it worked.
Yeah, that was get rich slowly.
Or, I'm sorry. Yeah, get rich slowly. So what's more important?
For search engine strategy?
For growing an audience. Is it the SEO? Or is it something else?
So there is some people say diaspora, but I always say diaspora. A diaspora of people in the world who want exactly what you have. They just don't know you exist yet. And all you have to do is get in front of the people who want exactly what you have. If you spend your time trying to convert people who want something similar to what you have, but you have to convince them, then you've missed the boat, because there is low-hanging fruit all over the world. And some people are even searching for things like buy Dan's program, and they just can't find it. Mm-hmm. So there is no priority in how you find your people. But there definitely is a sense that you need all prongs of the pitchfork. When somebody is searching for how to do CPR, they probably need it right then and there. Mm-hmm. And if you offer that help, then I believe you are ethically bound to try your best to get to the top of the search engine for that topic. If you can help someone better than other people, then you had better work on figuring out how to be there, because your audience is looking for you at that moment in time, and they're even use the words buy. Their wallet is on the table. There are other people who want exactly what you have, but they're getting it a different way. For instance, being on this podcast and Entrepreneur on Fire puts me in front of people that I would love to be in front of, but I couldn't get to by myself. Mm-hmm. So the strategy of becoming a guest in relevant podcasts and writing guest posts and writing for the Huffington Post, and looking for relevant hashtags on Twitter where people are congregating around your topic is not an SEO activity, but it is definitely looking to get in front of the people that you need to be in front of. So the idea that you would leverage your risk, leverage the SEO risk, look for referrals so that you're not totally vested in SEO, look for stuff on Twitter so you're not totally vested in Facebook, making sure that your business is leveraged all the way across and you're not wholly dependent on one source, I think is your top priority. Picking one of those things, I think is useless. I think your smartest plan is to become very knowledgeable in all of those things so that when you do become a guest post, you understand how to write about that on your own site so that your post can be found and it can link to the guest article. Just knowing the tools of the trade and how to use them will enable you to make smarter decisions, whatever avenue you choose that day, or whatever avenue chooses you. But I would say you can never deny them all. You've got to figure out a way to use them all. And for most of us, that means actually having a calendar, a schedule, or an agenda, or something that we're attacking with a plan that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. I mean, as you're talking, I'm thinking about myself and my businesses in the past, and even currently, about how I've seemed to go on these binges where I'll be nothing to do with keywords for a while, and then I'll flip it back the other way, and I'll be more keyword focused, and there's not a real consistency, if that makes sense.
So what we like to design for our clients is what we call a keyword theme map. So we figure out all the keywords that somebody would look for in in a niche, something even very tiny. And we've gone as tiny as stuffed pepper recipes because there's so many different ones. If we want to dominate that area, I want to know what they all are. So we actually put them on paper, and we create sort of a pyramid, like the very best one, the one that gets the best traffic and that we could win, we put at the top. And we work our way down, making sure that all of the lower ones link to the middle ones, which link to the upper ones, which link to our very best article. All the juice flows to the top. So while somebody is not thinking about keywords, if they're, you know, if we're a guest on a YouTube video or a Google Hangout or something, then I still want to go back and look at my map. And I know, all right, I'm talking about this topic. If I'm going to talk about this topic, where do I want, you know, the person who's running this program, where do I want them to link to? So I might not be working on keywords today, but I do want to link from Tom's show to this particular blog post. That's where I want to take the people. That's what bolsters my overall map.
Okay.
So that all of the activities are still working towards the ultimate goal. And some days, yeah, you're not working on keywords, but I still want tweets, you know, pins, pluses, shares, likes, and I want them on specific posts, and I want people to link to specific things. I still want to have a plan, and anytime I do anything online, I want to look at the plan and say, all right, how does this activity affect the whole plan? How do I make sure that it's not just good today, but it's going to help me tomorrow and the next day and the next day?
You know, as you're talking, I'm reminded of something I've thought many times since I started blogging a few years ago, is in order to be successful at this whole content thing and blogging, I think the thing I was probably most surprised by is how stinking organized you need to be.
Yeah, definitely. I
mean, it was a shocker for me. And it probably a shocker for me because my personality type is not one that's a high detail organized person. And I've been really blown away by how much planning goes into this. I mean, even I've shared about starting this podcast of, you know, it was easy to think, oh, get a mic and a recording software and get some guests and you start talking. And then you start getting into the back end of it, of the prep work that goes in and how to launch the thing and how to market it and all that. And it's been great because it's been an incredible learning experience. And I look forward to seeing where it goes. But anyway, that was just an observation that, you know, you got to be pretty stinking, you got to have your stuff together. So,
well, you know,
to win.
What us online entrepreneurs and, you know, I guess smaller entrepreneurs, what we fail to see is that the very biggest companies on the planet are highly organized. You know, if you go to a McDonald's, you know exactly that hamburger is going to be packaged and put in the bag the same way as it was put in the bag the last time at a McDonald's 900 miles from here.
Right.
Like, they understand their systems, their procedures. They train. They get it. They know exactly how it works. And for some reason, because there's really no school for what we do, we don't come out of the gate thinking like that. Like, all right, I'm going to start something new. I got to make sure that while I'm starting this new, I'm also creating the how-to guide for the VA who's going to learn to do this later, so I don't have to do it now, you know.
Yeah.
Just thinking that way, that you're always got to be organized. Who did I just watched this odd interview with Elle McPherson. And she was talking with Jimmy Fallon about what it was like to go from being a model to being a supermodel. And the thing that caught me the most was that not only is she really smart, but she spoke of her path in such a cavalier way that it just was so odd to me. Like, all the things that she was talking about, I would think would be major wins. And she was talking about it as if it was the natural next step. So she started off by saying that she was, you know, a swimsuit model on the cover of Sports Illustrated. She got on there three times, and she thought to herself, I think that I want to be the March cover girl because that's my birthday. And I also want to be the April cover girl because, you know, she had another reason. And the May cover girl because she had another reason. So she came to the conclusion that she wanted to do that. She should just create her own calendar, which nobody had ever done before. Hmm. So she hired a crew, photo crew. She found distribution. She found publishing to create her own calendar. And she marketed it. She sold thousands of these, millions. But what I thought was even more interesting was that she thought, I am going to film the process and I'm going to sell it to a TV show as the making of Elle's calendar, along with selling the calendar. We're talking about she was 28 years old in 83 or something like that, or 93. This wasn't normal. This didn't happen. And then when a company approached her to be the spokesperson for lingerie, she reversed the situation. And she said, I will not only be the spokesperson, but you will pay me to license my name for the use in your marketing, which apparently also had never been done. Wow. So she was making licensing fees and marketing fees, you know, where everyone else was just doing it to get their name out there. But the idea of being organized, I think some of it takes a little smarts too.
Oh, definitely.
And I mean, that was Elle McPherson. I've never even really thought of her in any other way other than a model, but she was just talking about things she does like they were just normal everyday things. And I thought, what is going on? That is crazy.
Yeah, like of course I'd map it out like this.
She trademarked the term the body, which she then turned into some sort of company that makes all kinds of fragrances and lingerie and stuff. Mm-hmm. She just trademarked that like when she was 27 or something because she thought, that's maybe a cool name for a business.
So you brought up her sharing about her journey or her path to where she is. Would you mind, you know, one of the things I like to cover with people is just to get a snapshot of maybe a time where maybe things weren't totally going your way in this business and maybe you're getting your butt kicked a little bit and how you got through that, how you shook it off.
I feel like that's every day.
So tell us, give us your deepest, darkest, juiciest thing ever, you know, your biggest fear, anything like that. I mean, what comes to mind when I just, so what was a time that you really had to say, man, I got to motor through this stuff and you know, fight my way through it.
Well, shoot, I feel like that's every day of my life. You know, being in the blogging conference niche that we're in and not in at the same time, you know, there's new conferences every week. Like a new company pops up and shows up in a city the week before you're going to be there, you know, or across town or something. And every once in a while, I just think, you know, like Pepsi comes out with a soda with no sugar and then Coke comes out with a soda with no sugar. And I think, you know what, these kinds of things, they happen to everyone. Like competition is out there. Business is hard. And we have a friend, Misty, who says all the time, you know, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you got to be a warrior because there's nothing easy about it. There's just no easy path.
I'll ask her about that. She's going to be on next week.
Oh, you know, Misty?
Yeah. I met you in Chicago.
Oh yeah.
At that,
she came.
That event and a bunch of us went out to grab pizza or something like that. And that's kind of where you and I connected and she was there too. So
she says you got to be a warrior and she's amazing. You know what? You really got to talk to her about. And if you're listening to this podcast, you got to skip over to her interview too. But she is amazing at business process. Like on her team, no one's allowed to tag her with a task. Like every single task goes to someone else. She does get to know tasks. Hmm. So she's out there drumming up business, and then I think twice a week or three times a week, she sets aside an hour for the team to come together and ask her any questions that they have. But otherwise, her assistant, every single email that comes in gets assigned to someone else. I think, man, that is awesome.
That's good stuff there, man. I'll be sure to ask her about that.
Yeah. So anyway, I've been asked a few times this question, and I got to think that every single day is a struggle. Like, it's a struggle from the point of, how do I spend more time with the family? How do I, you know, Rachel's got 7 kids and I have 4 kids. So this business supports, you know, 11 kids. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a burden right there every day. I have never been down. Like, I've never let anything happen take me down emotionally. And I know from the people that we work with and that sometimes is a struggle. You know, whether it's people online saying stuff, whether it's you get a Google alert and your name pops up and somebody says you suck, you know, or something like that. That none of that stuff matters. Because no matter what, every negative thing that happens in your business, for some reason your brain blows up, you know, a billion times, and you somehow forget about the 99 million things that were good about the business. You know, the 900 testimonials that you got last week that were unbelievable, they seem to all be dwarfed by the one or two things that make life hard.
Have you always had that perspective, or is that something you had to learn?
I think I've always had that. Well, my buddy Mark will tell you that in high school, I asked out every girl and that I got turned down like all the time. But I only remember the ones that I actually got to go out with. I don't even know how it's possible, but he will tell me all the time, like, dude, do you remember when you asked out that girl lunch and she told you no flat out? And we're like, dude, I have no memory of that. I don't know what you're talking about. But I know I went out with her sister 3 weeks later, you know, or something like that. So I think that I've always been that way. But we serve people. We help people. We make lives better. And there are going to be people who are going to try to tear down that ship, you know, and who cares? You know, more power to you. The fact that you have the time to do that means that you're not serving your people. You know, you're not making your business better. So go ahead and enjoy your rant today. Like, because I'm busy focusing on the people that I am trying to serve as best as we possibly can.
That's a great perspective. I mean, I've shared before many times, but, you know, it's just learning to reframe things. And I think the biggest example in my own life is, you know, how my wife and I built our family. We have 3 kids that were adopted. We tried for several years to have biological kids, and not being able to ended up being the greatest thing that ever happened to us, you know? And so when things don't go your way, I try to remind myself that, hey, this could be another one of those things.
You ever watch that show, Joan of Arcadia?
No, I never have, man.
It was a show. It was on Fox, I don't know, like 10 years ago. It had a very Christian bent to it. It was about this girl named Joan who talked to God, and God manifested himself. Like, as the janitor in the school, he would stop her and tell her what she needed to be doing and other stuff. Well, I'm not a spiritual guy, really. I don't really fall into that category. But just like what you said, in every single show, no matter what happened, there ended up being a reason. Mm-hmm. No, something came out of that. So no matter whether it's you lost a client, you got fired, somebody said something bad, you just grew, your skin got tougher, you weren't doing something, maybe you learned a lesson that is going to come back 5 years from now, you won't even know, that will have made your business so much better. Like, it doesn't really matter what the bad things are, because somehow, and I don't know how, but somehow there always ends up being something, some good reason for that thing to have happened. No matter how sucky it is, it's just, there always ends up being something. You know, we sold a product in December, this great product. We got like 60 online entrepreneurs to put a complete program in. There were like $500 courses. There was a $1,000 course. I mean, all of these things. And the whole bundle was $27. Mm-hmm. And about 2 weeks after it was over, there started this Facebook thread of hate, because the $27 bundle wasn't just ebooks. Like, you actually had to go sign up for someone's course. Even though you got it for free, you had to go sign up, which meant you were going to get emails. So there were like 25 people who spent an entire 2 hours one night just saying how horrible that was, you know, and just ranting about how horrible we were and how what a horrible product that was, and they would never buy anything from us again. And, you know, like, these are bloggers who really should be focused on their audience. But for us, as much as it sucked to read all those things, I mean, they didn't understand what they were getting, which meant we have to go back and we have to be better at our messaging on the front end. It's not really a lesson like we gave money back or we regretted it or anything like that, but there's always truth in something. So we came back and said, all right, you know what we need to do is we need to do exactly the same awesomeness next time, but let's make it clear that you're not getting an ebook, but instead you're getting access to a 6-month course that you're going to have to go sign up for. And I'm totally prepared to make this slight change, but for 2 hours of my life, I got to read all kinds of hate mail. You know, like I don't even know where it came from, but somebody just decided, I don't want to sign up for something. I want to read an ebook right now, and this product is horrible, and I don't know why, you know. And I thought, wow, this sucks. But in the end, it's just going to be a much better product.
Yeah, you know, you take it on the chin where you need to move on and, you know, get a little better. So
yeah,
it's really.
And sometimes simple, so. You don't get better until somebody makes you look at your business a different way, mm-hmm. because they said something that felt like you got punched in the gut.
Yeah. So, I guess to kind of bring our time together home here, I wanted to just what's next for you? You know, where are you going? Where do you see yourself in the next couple of years? And where can we reach out to you? Where can people find you if they want to get in touch and check out one of your events? So, you know, what's next?
Well, August 29th, we'll be in Chicago, and there you.
Cool.
Actually looking at Naperville, the University of Illinois right now, as a venue. What's next for us is, we had this conversation yesterday. I understand. You know, I used to work for a guy that ran a truck stop, and he became the president of the National Association of Truck Stops. And I said to myself, you know what? I get that. I understand what the top of that pyramid looks like. You become the president. I do not understand what the top of our pyramid looks like. Where do we get where we're satisfied with as high as we're going to go? I don't know what that looks like yet. And I'm okay with it. I just know that I want to continue to serve our bloggers and make them better. At some point in time, we're going to write a book. We've got the book. We don't understand the timing. Everybody should have a book, you know, but understanding exactly when that book should be released, still trying to figure that out. We run the Amplify podcast, which Jay Baer just rated as the number one social media and blogging podcast on his site.
Congratulations.
So I thought that was pretty cool. And then we've just started going international with Blogging Concentrated. We're going to do New Zealand, Dubai, and the UK this year, if everything works out. So that's going pretty well. But I think that I'm most interested in the things that take on a different turn. So for instance, after the August 29th Chicago event, I think we're driving to Atlanta. But on the way there, we're doing 6 nights in a row where we're going to do like a fireside chat interview that we're going to stream live on Roku and on YouTube. And they're going to be with cool people, like Danielle Smith, Extraordinary Mommy. She's on the red carpet at the Oscars, you know, doing stuff for Entertainment Tonight, and like a few authors, but we're just going to do this thing that's a little bit different. And I'd like to get to the point where we do our own TED style event, you know, mm-hmm. TEDx style event, where we have online entrepreneurs, you know, giving 20 minutes of their best insight into the world somewhere. And I'd love to, you know, live stream that on YouTube as well. But as of today, I do not know where the top is. So I figure if I continually attack serving bloggers the best way I can, that path is going to lay out in front of me. I just haven't figured it out yet.
Well, I look forward to seeing where it goes, man. And I wholeheartedly agree. I think you obviously you help enough people, and things will get real clear for where you need to go next. So,
and I'll say, you know, to reach us, we're at bloggingconcentrated.com. And then Rachel, she runs findingjoy.net, which is, she got 1 million views of her Facebook page this week. One of her goals is to reach 1,000 likes on her blog post in the first hour she releases the blog post. She's a Huffington Post writer. She's got the third most viewed post on Huffington Post ever. She really is a true blogger. I mean, she just rocks it. You know, 100,000 people, 200,000 people in a day happens on her site regularly, and she really is a professional. So I would say check out findingjoy.net and bloggingconcentrated.com.
Awesome. Well, Dan, thank you so much for hanging out with me today and talking. I guarantee you that that there's some stuff in here that's going to help a lot of our listeners, and I really appreciate you you serving us like this. And everybody, I encourage you to check out Dan at his site. You can check the show notes. We'll have all the information in there. And
we'd like to have you as a guest on our podcast. We do guest hosts. We don't do interviews. So we want you to come on, and we're going to serve up some blogging social media headlines and get your take on what's going on in social media today.
Love it.
Be awesome.
I'd love to, man. I appreciate that. So, all right, everybody, that's it for the Strongpreneur Podcast today with Mr. Dan R. Morris. Go toe-to-toe with the hard stuff. You know, join the war on mediocrity. Pick one thing you heard today, put it into practice, and get a little bit stronger. And with that, we're out.